This is the Alkazine Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hoffman.
In this episode of the Alkazine Brief, I talk with Dr. Jeffrey Auletta. Dr. Auletta is Senior Vice President, Patient Outcomes and Experience, and Chief Scientific Officer of the National Marrow Donor Program, Be the Match, and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR, at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Auletta is also the Senior Director of the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, CRO Services. Now, the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research provides a unique resource of information and expertise to the medical and scientific community. And some of this work goes back to the early 1940s and 1950s, with experimental treatment for radiation sickness and the development of new standards for leukemia, lymphoma, and sickle cell disease. Now, in 1972, the work really started to take off for the organization when a handful of doctors from the United States, France, and the Netherlands created an international registry of transplants in order to see which therapies helped people the most. Over time, the informal alliance grew to involve many more countries, and a formal research collaboration between the Medical College of Wisconsin and the National Marrow Donor Program Be the Match. Today, the International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research Organization received data from about 350 medical centers from around the world. Researchers at the center have analyzed clinical outcomes of more than 600,000 patients who underwent a bone marrow transplantation. And more recently, the organization expanded its activities to collect data from other cell therapies, such as chimeric antigen receptor T cells, also known as CAR T cell therapy. Without a doubt, research and development and the application of cellular therapies have come a long way from their early beginnings. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is the Oncozine Brief. The Oncozine Brief is developed in collaboration with our online journal Oncozine, where you can find additional information and the latest news about cancer, cancer diagnosis and treatment, and cancer prevention. For more information on how to support this program, visit our website at oncozine.com. And if you're living in the United States and want to receive our newsletter, text the word cancer to 66866. And we will make sure that you'll receive our newsletter, which includes an overview of the latest news in oncology and hematology.
This is the Oncozine Brief. For the latest news about cancer and cancer treatment, visit our online journal, Oncozine, at www.oncozine.com.
On the phone with me is Dr. Jeffrey Auletta. Dr. Auletta is Senior Vice President, Patient Outcomes and Experience, and Chief Scientific Officer of the National Marrow Donor Program, Be the Match, and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR, at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Auletta is also the Senior Director of the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, CRO Services. Dr. Auletta, welcome to the Oncozine Brief.
Thank you very much.
Now, the National Marrow Donor Program, Be the Match, and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research recently published some very interesting news. But before we go to talk about that, tell me a little bit more about yourself, about your background, how you got here, and about the patients that you're trying to help.
So I am a pediatric bone marrow transplant physician. I'm also boarded in infectious disease. So that's my clinical background. And my research interests have spanned things from immunomodulation and immune reconstitution after transplant to most recently healthcare disparities in transplant. So I work at the National Marrow Donor Program, or NMDP. And the NMDP is the nation's donor registry. So what that means is we are the national donor registry where we provide stem cell grafts for patients in need who do not have a HLA or human leukocyte antigen matched donor within the family. So these include patients who have a malignant disease such as acute leukemia, or a non-malignant disease such as sickle cell disease. And our registry provides the product for those patients in need. And our registry is based upon altruistic donors who come forward, provide a sample that gets processed, which is the HLA part of the process. And that sample is banked in our registry. And when a transplant center requires a donor, they would contact the National Marrow Donor Program, us, and we would come up with the best HLA match for their patient. Now, HLA is a very diverse gene. In other words, it is highly polymorphic, meaning that the HLA genes are based upon the ethnic diversity of the patient. So that's why you and I have different immune systems, for example. And therefore, we recognize things that are different. And so when we match a patient with a donor, we are matching them based upon the HLA loci. And we do that through the sample that the donor provides. As I mentioned before, those patients who are ethnically diverse do have less of a chance of having an HLA-matched donor in our registry based upon the genetic diversity of their HLA. So what that means is that those patients who are white Caucasians like myself have about a 79% chance of finding an unrelated donor versus a patient who is Black or African American who has a matching chance of about 29%. And that is largely because our registry is made up of white Caucasian patients, and we're trying to increase the diversity of our registry, which is actually one of the most diverse ones in the world, in order to provide a patient in need, namely a patient who's ethnically diverse, with an unrelated donor.
So when you look at some of these challenges, one major barrier in the treatment of patients you mentioned earlier includes patients diagnosed with leukemia, sickle cell anemia, or similar diseases. How are you trying to address this? And in addition, how can you be sure that everyone can equally access your database or registry and benefit from that? What are some of the things that you're trying to change here?
Great question, Peter. So there are many barriers to transplant and cell therapy. In other words, there are patient-related barriers, such as race and ethnicity that I'd mentioned. There are also socioeconomic barriers, insurance barriers for the patient. And then there are also physician barriers. In other words, knowledge that the physician has who is referring to a transplant center their patient. Some referring oncologists aren't necessarily up to date in terms of what transplantable disease indications there are, so that creates a barrier. And then lastly, there are barriers at the transplant program level in terms of center expertise or capacity barriers, or even structural racism is still one of these barriers. So the National Marrow Donor Program is addressing all three of these types of non-HLA barriers at the patient level, educating the referring oncologist, and then providing support to the bone marrow transplant centers. So these non-HLA barriers, we provide various services for. So we have patient financial assistance and education, for example. We have patient support centers to navigate. We have navigators who help patients through the transplant journey. We have outreach programs. We have what's called a Jason Carter Clinical Trial Search and Support, which allows patients to access various clinical trials to see if they're eligible for them, and then also get their questions answered regarding those clinical trials. So these are the non-HLA services that we provide to reduce patient barriers. But we also are part of the CIBMTR, or the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, which is a collaboration between the NMDP and the Medical College of Wisconsin. And within the CIBMTR, we are doing both observational studies with our large database, as well as prospective clinical trials. And one of those clinical trials that's being sponsored by the National Marrow Donor Program is utilizing a mismatched unrelated donor. So I explained how we wanted to look at HLA matching, but when you consider the genetic diversity of America, which is only increasing because of multiple racial relationships and offspring, we are reaching an inability to provide a 8 out of 8, which is the number system of a well-matched, unrelated donor for all patients in need. Therefore, we need to hurdle or supersede the HLA barrier, and we're doing that with our prospective research utilizing a mismatched unrelated donor. And we're doing that by utilizing a chemotherapy drug called cyclophosphamide and using that as graft versus host disease prophylaxis. So in other words, part of a complication of an allogeneic or getting someone else's stem cells is that someone else is a different immune system from the patient's immune system. And so therefore, we need to temporize that donor immune system through something called prophylaxis or graft versus host disease prophylaxis. And the field has utilized this in the setting of haploidentical transplant, in other words, 50% matching between donor recipient. And we're studying the mismatch unrelated donor setting in terms of utilizing post-transplant cyclophosphamide. And thus far, our first initial clinical trial called the 15-MMUD trial was successful in terms of a couple points. Number one, it was able to provide a bone marrow graft for about 50% of the patients enrolled on the trial. In addition to that, it showed a survival which was comparable to other donor sources, whether that be a haploidentical donor or a well-matched unrelated donor. And then third, it had an overall survival of about 75%. So with those three results, which were favorable, we now have what's called an access trial, where we're utilizing the mismatched unrelated donors, this time using peripheral blood, which is the most common graft source used in the field. And then also seeing for the first time enrolling some pediatric patients as well. So that trial is ongoing and it has enrolled quite nicely, but we are still waiting for the trial to fully accrue.
Let's take a break. This is the Oncogene Brief. If you're just joining us, in today's episode of the Oncogene Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta. Dr. Oletta is Senior Vice President, Patient Outcomes and Experience, and Chief Scientific Officer of the National Marrow Donor Program, MEDAMATCH, and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR, at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Oletta is also the Senior Director of the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, CRO Services. I'm Peter Hovland, and this is the Oncogene Brief.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This is the Oncogene Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hovland.
And welcome back. This is the Oncogene Brief. If you're just joining us, in today's episode of the Oncogene Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta. So when you look at some of these issues, there are an awful lot of things to digest here. You help patients in areas that are non-medical issues, trying to solve one of the most complex problems in medicine, that of treatment-related disparities or health-related disparities that make sure that everybody has access or can get access. You're also providing the education for physicians to help them in this effort. And I assume that you also try to make a case with insurance companies and make sure that as many people as possible can have access to treatment. And at the same time, you're dealing with the scientific and medical issues, right?
Correct.
I understand that what you're trying to do is offer a lot of hope for these patients. And there is a lot of good news in that area. But there are also concerns. You mentioned graft versus host disease. Today, graft versus host disease remains, I assume, one of the biggest issues in hematology and stem cell therapies, right? In addition to finding a good match in cell transplants, are there other concerns that could limit the success of cell transplants?
Yes. So in general, the allogeneic or using someone else's stem cells transplantation is limited by a donor availability. So that's what we're addressing in terms of the mismatch unrelated donor. But it's also limited by outcomes. And what I mean by that is the top three reasons for patient demise after allogeneic stem cell transplant have remained the same for decades. And those are primary disease relapse in the malignant setting, organ toxicity or graft versus host disease, and then lastly, infection. So unfortunately, still in 2023, we're kind of using a sledgehammer for allogeneic stem cell transplant when we really want to be able to use chisels in order to kind of go after targeted disease such as cancer. So that kind of goes and dovetails into the field of immune-mediated cell therapies. In other words, we can now take cells out of a patient who has a particular form of leukemia or lymphoma, educate those T cells to recognize certain protein expressions on the leukemia cells or lymphoma cells and infuse them back into the patient so that those cells will attack that specific cancer. That's called chimeric antigen receptor CAR T cells. And so that has really been a game changer in the field. So that is addressing the relapse part. But we do know that patients relapse for a multitude of reasons. In other words, we look at things called immune escape mechanisms, where those protein expressions on the cancer cell are down-modulated or decreased on the expression on the surface. And so therefore, these CAR T cells sometimes don't work or other forms of immune therapy. So there are many different mechanisms of cancer immune escape that still result in primary disease relapse. In addition to that is the graft versus host disease. And so, again, I mentioned that number, 8 out of 8. So it gets really a little bit of immunology lesson here. There are different types of classes for the HLA, class 1 and class 2. And so we're measuring or matching, rather, at a finite number of those particular alleles. And so there's a whole heck of a lot that we're not matching on. So that gets into the term of minor histoincompatibility antigens. And so therefore, that which we don't match has the ability to provoke a graft versus host disease response in a transplant recipient. And so I mentioned the post-transplant cyclophosphamide uses graft versus host disease prophylaxis. So that has been highly successful in terms of being able to kind of overexceed or leap the HLA barrier. And so therefore that matching doesn't have to be perfect, but in and of itself, that cyclophosphamide is a chemotherapeutic agent. So despite it being relatively successful in terms of preventing acute and long-term or chronic graft versus host disease, it comes at the expense of toxicity. So things like infection or things like bleeding from the bladder area and also potentially longer-term toxicity like predisposition to therapy-related leukemia. So the field is working on different ways of utilizing or optimizing, rather, graft versus host disease prophylaxis. And again, turning towards cell therapy, can we take out certain cells from the graft that we collect and infuse into the patient? In other words, take out those specific T cells that mediate graft versus host disease. And there's success in terms of doing that. So there's ways of depleting those particular cells. So that's graft versus host disease optimization. And then lastly, I mentioned infection. So we do have pharmaceutical agents that we have in our armamentarium now that we didn't have 10 years ago. A lot of the antifungal drugs, for example. And we are utilizing preventative ways and diagnostic tests where we can detect infection before it manifests clinically, such as by fever or chest x-ray changes or CT scans. So we're optimizing our infection prevention and treatment. So by addressing the top three reasons for patient demise, we are making headway where we didn't have these tools in our tool chest before. But clearly, those three reasons for patient demise are still challenges today in 2023.
Yeah, I can totally imagine that. Now, one of the things you mentioned earlier about the potential of matching patients and donors is a magical number of 8/8 matching points. I understand that studies have now shown that you can really match patients at a different level, a lower number than 8 matching points, going as low as 5 or 6 matching points out of 8. Can you tell me a little bit more about this, about the complexities involved and the benefits of working with not fully matched patients, and how that may widen the potential for patients that now can be effectively treated?
This gets back to that 15 MMUD study. So taking a step back, we know that there are many patients who need a transplant, who don't get a transplant for lots of different reasons. I mentioned some of those non-HLA reasons, right? In other words, low socioeconomic status, don't have insurance, aren't referred to a transplant center, those type of issues. And then there are the HLA issues. And I mentioned that our registry is primarily comprised of white non-Latino donors who have a higher match rate than a Black African-American. For example, is that 79% to 29% that I mentioned. Going back to that a number of patients who have a potential need for an allogeneic stem cell transplant per year is around 15 to 16,000. And so we know that that number decreases for those two reasons that I mentioned, the non-HLA barriers and the HLA barriers. And so this study, this 15 MMUD, this mismatched unrelated donor, and what you're mentioning, Peter, is that number. We don't have to be a perfect HLA match now across those class 1 and class 2 HLA loci. We can actually now be less than that perfect match with the utilization of the post-transplant cyclophosphamide as graft versus host disease prophylaxis. So that study was able to enroll about 50% of patients of ethnically diverse backgrounds who would not be able to receive a well-matched unrelated donor because that just didn't exist for them. But with the post-transplant cyclophosphamide in the setting of utilizing a mismatched unrelated donor, that has increased nearly double the amount of being able to provide a transplant for those patients in need. So when you kind of do that rough arithmetic in your head, if we start off with around 15 to 16,000 patients and kind of get to various levels of reasons for why those patients don't get down to transplant, you think about roughly in the United States of America, there are around 8 to 10,000 transplants provided each year. That number is staggering in terms of being able to provide a donor for all based upon a mismatch unrelated donor or a haploidentical donor. So those ethnically diverse patients are now being able to receive a life-saving allogeneic transplant because of our ability to hurdle the HLA barrier with the post-transplant cyclophosphamide. Obviously, we have a lot of work to do. I talked about the three reasons why patients still die after allogeneic transplant, but we are definitely making headway. And the ability to provide a donor for all through a mismatch unrelated donor is really a game changer. And again, based upon increasing the amount of ethnically diverse patients who can receive a life-saving transplant.
Let's take a break. This is the Oncogene Brief. If you're just joining us in today's episode of the Oncogene Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is the Oncogene Brief.
Sarcoma. Odds are you've never heard that word before. For the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word because sarcoma is cancer. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is bringing hope to the families whose lives have been turned upside down by a cancer they had never heard of until diagnosis. Please join us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, go to curesarcoma.org.
This is the Oncogene Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hoffland.
And welcome back. This is the Oncogene Brief. If you're just joining us in today's episode of the Oncogene Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is the Oncogene Brief. One of the things you mentioned is the importance of donors, because success is based on matching patients with donors. Now, you're using different ways to recruit people to sign up to become a donor. But tell me a little bit more about how important it is for people to either become a donor or to consider being a donor. How and when are you becoming a donor? Because I understand that there is some misconceptions about this. And one of those misconceptions is the fact that many people believe that if you are going to the DMV or MVD to renew your driver's license, there is an opportunity to become a donor after life. But that's not what we're talking about here, right? That's not the same thing as joining Be the Match as a donor. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So when you go to the DMV and they ask if you'd like to be an organ donor, they're asking if you should have an accident and obviously pass, would you like your organs to be donated to another person? And probably the vast majority of us who are on this podcast are automatically have that imprinted on our driver's license. And what you're getting at is we should have that same altruistic feeling about being a donor for a patient in need as we do for that donation of our organs. But the issue is awareness, right? I don't think those on the podcast would have appreciated that there is roughly about 15 to 16,000 patients every year who are diagnosed with a malignancy alone that would necessitate a stem cell transplant. And then when you add other diseases on top of it, like sickle cell disease, it's a significant amount of unmet need that we have. And part of what the National Marrow Donor Program is bring awareness to that unmet need. And what we really would like is there to be more people who get involved in our registry. It's very simple to do. If interested, go to our website, click on becoming a donor. We send you a packet which has a swab. What you do is literally swab the inside of your cheek a couple of times, put it in the container, and send it back to us. And that is a very easy thing to do. It doesn't hurt at all. I think that's one of the first misperceptions is that I can't do that. Well, we're all put on this planet for a reason. And one of those main reasons is to help out other people in need. And I think that that's the message I want to be able to promote. And as does the organization, is that there are many people in need and we need you to be part of our registry to help those people. So that's the first thing, awareness and education of the problem. And the second part of your question is, what does it mean when you become a donor? What is the process? And yes, there is a process. Obviously, we want it to be safe for you as the donor to give your stem cells to another person. And so therefore, you have to go through some blood work to make sure that you don't have an active viral infection, for example, and also that you go through a physical exam to make sure that you're able to withstand a process called apheresis, or the collection of your blood, and then also potentially a bone marrow harvest where we would collect stem cells directly from the bone marrow. And so that's kind of the initial checklist with regards to a pre-donor workup. And then once you have passed those tests, then it's up to you to actually give your stem cells in one of two ways. One is through the apheresis machine that I mentioned. So what happens with that is we give a drug that stimulates your stem cells in your bone marrow to leave the bone marrow and enter your bloodstream. Then we collect those stem cells through the apheresis machine. There's an IV placed in one arm where blood comes out, goes through the machine, spins up the cells, collects them in the bag, and sends the blood back to you in real time. So there's no changes in blood pressure. And that process takes anywhere from 3 to 6 hours, depending upon your size and the size of the recipient. And the other is a bone marrow harvest, where you would go into the operating room, get sedated, and then have a needle placed in the back area of your pelvis. And then bone marrow would be extracted, put into a bag, and then sent off. Obviously, there would be some discomfort with that, but it goes away in a couple of days. And for the vast majority of donors, as in like 99% of donors, they do absolutely fine. And again, if I go back to my statement of why we're on this planet, you then have done a remarkable job in terms of being a potential hope for a patient who may, in fact, have a disease that would not otherwise be cured without the stem cells that you gave. So that's a pretty good feeling in terms of being able to do that.
Now, early in the program, you referred to optimizing donors. This is part of the whole process of trying to make sure that you are getting the best donors to join the registry, because I understand not everybody can be a donor. Tell me a little bit about this.
Yeah, the vast majority of people can, Peter. So the main criteria is age. So age greater than 18 years old, because you have to consent for the process. The other thing is just a willingness to go through the process that I had mentioned. Now, there's going to be an upper limit, for those of us who are, 60 years or above, the chances of us, of our stem cells being utilized clinically are pretty low. So we tend to gravitate towards wanting younger people, because obviously they can stay in the registry longer, right, as they advance in age. But also with regards to their stem cells are, for lack of a better term, more vibrant than an older person's stem cells. And, it's just the aging process. We all go through it. We all get gray hair. Same thing happens to our stem cells. There's a process of something like gray hair to a stem cell. So it's not as active or robust. So again, anybody can become a donor in our registry based upon age and based upon desire. And we strongly encourage more ethnically diverse patients to be a part of our registry because of the fact of the disparate HLA matching rates that I mentioned based upon ethnicity. So we welcome all persons of color, all persons of ethnicity to go through the donation process, get that swab to us and be a part of the registry. Because again, it's those ethnically diverse patients that are most challenged in terms of finding an allogeneic or unrelated donor.
And I guess it's really important, right, to make sure that you can offer patients with different ethnicities the opportunity to be treated, and to make sure that people with different ethnicities are signing up to become a donor.
That's correct. Yeah, for sure. And again, we're all Americans, right? But we all have different cultures and different backgrounds, and it's the diversity of America that makes America great. But from an HLA matching standpoint, you're exactly spot on. It's easier to find unrelated donors who are part of your own ethnicity and race than it is outside. And so therefore, that's why we welcome the ethnically diverse donor to be a part of our registry, because it's for sure going to enhance our ability to provide a product to a patient in need of the same race and ethnicity.
Now, you mentioned the role that you and your organization are playing. You also mentioned the role that donors and patients can have, and in general, how people who have not yet signed up to be a donor can join Be The Match registry, right? But the medical profession, the doctors, the oncologists, the hematologists, the oncology nurses, and many others who are involved in treating patients also play an important role. When we talk about referral, for example, and we look at how important this process is of getting patients matched, how important is an early referral to, for example, a transplant center? Because I guess that really one of the questions of education and helping physicians to also play their role includes early referral. So how important is such an early referral to a transplant center to address the barriers you mentioned?
Simple answer, it's vital to be referred as early as possible to a transplant center. And there's multiple studies out there to suggest and back that up, but it also kind of logically makes sense. And that is, if you need a service that requires a specialist, it's best to be referred as quickly as possible to that specialist. And in particular, the same holds for stem cell transplants. So when we look, for example, at a patient who has leukemia, so as a pediatric oncologist, we give chemotherapy to patients to get their disease into a remission, or an inability to detect the cancer, for example, in the bone marrow. And then based upon the availability of a donor, then that pediatric patient would undergo an allogeneic stem cell transplant. So the issue is, you want to be able to find that donor as quickly as possible. So therefore, you want to perform HLA typing on a patient in need of a allogeneic stem cell transplant early on in order to identify a potential donor. But also, it's that critical timing to transplant. So again, I mentioned about stem cell transplants still kind of being a sledgehammer rather than a chisel. Same thing applies to chemotherapy. Yes, we have more targeted chemotherapy that utilizes immunotherapy, for example, or house cell signal on the inside, but we still are using sledgehammers of chemotherapy that cause collateral damage, like damage to organs, cardiac or lung, or potentially liver, and then increased risk of long-term side effects like growth and thyroid issues, or even predisposed to other leukemias. So the point is, you don't want to expose unnecessarily patients to more sledgehammer chemotherapy if you can get them the transplant faster. So that spares toxicity to that patient so that they can undergo a stem cell transplant. And so therefore, that relationship and that communication with the community oncologist and the transplant center is absolutely crucial. And we have a program called HLA Today, which facilitates that. In other words, we can provide that HLA kit to the patient in need and his or her direct biologic family so that they can do that swab process I mentioned and send off samples to both the NMDP or to another reference lab so that the community physician can get that HLA typing. And that's not, again, on the checklist of getting a transplant, check off the box on HLA typing to then be able to identify a donor sooner. And we know that, therefore, when you do that and have the success of identifying a donor sooner, that patient is exposed less to toxicity like additional chemotherapy and can get referred faster. So it's really important to actually know what transplantable disease indications there are, to perform that HLA typing and to get those patients to the transplant center. And again, from an education standpoint, the NMDP can provide that education to physicians, to community oncologists or hematologists through our website, where we can list, or where we have listed, our transplantable disease indications.
Let's take a short break, and then we're back with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is the Ocazine Brief on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio with Peter Hofland.
And welcome back. In today's episode of the Ocazine Brief, I'm talking with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Ocazine Brief. Now, an early referral to a transplant center and an early consultation is vital. But what about the outcomes? Are the outcomes in these cases also better?
Yes, there's actually been several studies to suggest that in the acute myeloid leukemia setting, and then also in the myelodysplastic syndrome setting. So those patients who were referred faster to a transplant center had better outcomes. And a lot of that has to do, again, with less exposure to toxicity so they could actually get the transplant, but also to capitalize on disease being in remission because it's a finite period of time before that disease no longer is kept in check and in remission. So those are the two critical reasons for early referral.
So this would really help patients, right? Especially if they are potential candidates for a bone marrow transplant. This really emphasizes the role of physicians to help patients as early as possible. But even the role of patient advocates is important, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, one of the complexities that you encounter is finding a match for all patients, and this may include patients with differences in ethnicity and culture. But what about patients that may be candidates but might be uninsured, or patients with low incomes? These patients may have poor quality healthcare and seek healthcare less often. And when they do seek healthcare, it is more likely to be for an emergency, right? These patients may not be able to afford certain treatments, or their insurance company may not cover those treatments. Are there programs that can address this to help patients to get treatment as early as possible?
For sure. I'll touch upon the NMDP, and then I'll touch upon an initiative that we started. So the NMDP, through the generosity of philanthropic donors, has a foundation, and again, anybody can go to our website, and if they're interested in terms of supporting that effort, which provides patient financial assistance for those patients. And I mentioned some of our support services in terms of patient navigation and education as well. But fundamentally, Peter, this is gets into something that really has moved me over the years and something that I'm really quite involved with now, and that is healthcare disparities, and certainly there are others who are involved in this field as well. But when we think about the United States of America, again, I talked about this altruism in terms of becoming a stem cell donor. I think we also need to have that altruism of helping out those who are less fortunate than us. And there's lots of ways of doing this. But we know for a fact that those ethnically diverse patients, they're underrepresented in terms of the population, but they're overrepresented in terms of poverty and uninsured status. So therefore, there are more persons of color, particularly Black and African Americans, who don't have health insurance, who are living at poverty. And when we think about what that means, you know, there are roughly about 330 million people in the United States of America. And in 2021, there are about 12% who lived at or living at poverty levels, and about 8% who didn't have health insurance. So doing the math on that, it's about 40 million people living in poverty and about 27 million without health insurance. So what is living in poverty? You know, what does that mean? Obviously, we know when we see people living on the street that that person's poor. But when we look at how our country is defining poor people by their median income, that number has to be double or triple of $40 million. And for example, what I'm getting at is in 2021, the poverty threshold for someone who is less than 65 years of age and lives in a two-person and two-children family is $27,500. I mean, you know, so therefore, if you're $30,000 in income, you weren't considered as part of that 40 million. So when we think about that, that number now is staggering. And we know that those persons who get public health insurance, for example, Medicaid, we know that though that in and of itself is a poor prognostic in terms of outcome for various ailments in medicine, but in particular for example, stem cell transplant. And it's not just being on Medicaid, right? It's what's this holistic theme called social determinants of health. And that is when a patient enters my office, in particular, 70% of their health is determined outside of that medical encounter. So things like socioeconomic factors, physical environment, how they behave in terms of their health. Do they smoke, for example? Now, when we add social determinants of health on top of a medical diagnosis, it's like a deluge of things that impact outcomes. And so therefore, I've had the privilege and pleasure to start a initiative called the Access Initiative. And that is a collaborative with the NMDP and the American Society of Transplantation and Cell Therapy. So Dr. Stella Davies, who's a pediatric transplant physician at Cincinnati Children's Medical Center, and I are the inaugural co-chairs of this initiative. And that initiative has at its mission and vision to enhance access by reducing barriers to stem cell transplant and cell therapy, and also to reduce healthcare disparities. And really by focusing in on awareness of the problem, poverty, as I just mentioned, and also racial inequity in terms of some of these examples. So this is a ecosystem-wide initiative involving academic centers, transplant and cell therapy physicians, patient advocate organizations, pharmaceutical industry, and it's still at its grassroots level, but you know, it started about a year ago, but we have a website and a publication that people can read if interested. And we know that these are entrenched problems in our social system. So it's going to take quite some time to address them. But we had the option to say it's someone else's problem, right? You know, it's Congress's problem to enhance Medicaid coverage. It's, you know, the hospital's problem to give more charity care. But we all need to take that personal commitment and personal responsibility that it's our problem in this country. And we have to take that amongst ourselves and say, we are a flicker of light, but together we are quite the flame of change. And that's what we need to fundamentally do in the United States of America. We need to reprioritize our resources into ourselves so that these challenges, which just aren't unique to stem cell transplant, but are unique across lots of different diagnoses, these things need a comprehensive, collaborative approach in order to address and to change over time.
In our journal, Oncogene, we often publish articles discussing disparities. And in this show, we also ask physicians about this. But that 70% of a patient's health is determined outside of a medical encounter, outside of a medical consult with a physician in the clinic, that really stands out. But then we can do something about this, right? But I understand that we can only do this if we are willing to work together. Only then we can be successful in eliminating the issues that you mentioned, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So when it comes to research and transplant medicine, the future may hold a lot of good news. There's a lot going on, but equally important is, and you mentioned that earlier, is the fact that everybody should be able to benefit from this approach and have access.
Yeah, for sure.
Dr. Jeffrey Oletta, thank you so much for joining me today in the Oncogene Brief. I think we've learned a lot, but I'm sure that we've only scratched the surface of what is important.
For sure, Preeter, and thank you very much for having me. I just want to say in closing, I cannot stress how the world ticks really from what really matters. And with this profession, I've learned so much and been privy to so many different people and experiences. And I could say that, we all have that opportunity of impact, right? I mean, I obviously, as a physician, I'm blessed to be able to do that at bedside, literally laying my hands on someone else and helping to make them better. But, you don't have to be a physician a chief scientific director at the CIBMTR to do the same thing. And we all have that ability to do something as simple as swabbing our mouth to make a difference in terms of someone's lifetime. So that hope, that four-letter word of hope, is something that I hope that this audience and can message to other people on the outside in order to really make a difference in someone else's life.
Well, let's work on that. And again, Dr. Oletta, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great. Thanks, Peter.
In this episode of The Oncogene Brief, I spoke with Dr. Jeffrey Oletta. Dr. Oletta is Senior Vice President, Patient Outcomes and Experience. He is also Chief Scientific Officer of the National Marrow Donor Program, Be the Match, and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR, at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And Dr. Oletta is also Senior Director of the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, CRO Services. For more information about becoming a donor, please visit bethematch.org, Become a Donor. For more information about the National Marrow Donor Program, Be the Match, and the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR, at the Medical College of Wisconsin, go to cibmtr.org. For more information about the studies presented in this program, please go to our online journal, Oncogene, at oncogene.com. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is the Oncogene Brief. For us here at the Oncogene Brief, we want to thank you, our listeners, sponsors, and advertisers, for your ongoing support. Your support makes it possible that you can hear this program via PRX, Public Radio Exchange, and in the United Kingdom and mainland Europe via UK Health Radio. And you can also download our program via podcast and streaming media, including iTunes, Spotify, Audible, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and nearly anywhere you can find a podcast. For more information about supporting or sponsoring the Oncogene Brief, visit our website at oncogene@oncogene.com. If you're living in the United States and want to receive our newsletter, text the word CANCER to 66866, that is 66866, and we will make sure that you will receive our newsletter, which includes an overview of the latest news in oncology and hematology. Thank you all, and thank you for listening. And join us again for our next episode. I'm Peter Hoffland, and this is The Oncogene Brief.
The Oncogene Brief is a global medical educational service from the publishers of Oncogene and ADC Review, the journal of antibody drug conjugates. Support for the Oncogene Brief comes from our commercial underwriters and advertisers and the listeners to this station. For more information about advertising, underwriting, and sponsoring options, visit Oncogene at www.oncogene.com/podcasts. The Oncogene Brief contains health and medicine-related information and is provided for educational and entertainment purposes only. The content in this program is not intended as a substitute for professional medical or health advice and does not replace your doctor's advice and guidance. Your doctor is the best person to answer questions about your personal health. If you hear something in this program that doesn't agree with what your doctor has told you, ask him or her about it.